got Ms. Melanie Ramji, who is the director of the South African PR agency Two-Tone Communications, amongst many other things. You know, you see on your profile there, you are Special Olympics South Africa ambassador, deputy chairperson of that, and also a blogger on Hypress Live. Now, I need to know, firstly, there's many things that I'd like to know, because I personally am not really clued up on what a publicist does. And I think that may go for many others who wouldn't admit to not knowing, you know, what sort of surrounds that sort of profession. But to sort of kick it off, I want to focus on you. When we look at your handles, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Is it Hypress? I need to know where that comes from.
Yes, it is Hypress. I bring the hype to brand, so holler at your girl. I guess it started a few years ago. I started a record label with my then boyfriend, who was a DJ. He was DJ Hype. And I was just like, you know, Hypress Fitz. I used to do his PR and I used to hype him. So I was like always his hype woman or hype man. And then the name just stuck. And I just carried it out with the rest of my life. And it works when I sell it to clients, because they're like, Hypress, where does that come from? And I'm like, as I bring the hype to your brand. So it pretty much started out as a truth, because I was hyping my boyfriend, who was a DJ back in the day.
You know, considering the fact that you carried the name through, you know, all the way, would you say it sort of has memories? Would you say you owe it to the boyfriend back then? Or is it just now like, you know what, you sort of coined it, you know, back then, and the past is the past, and it is, you've made it something completely unique now at this point?
You know what, I think him choosing the name Hype was also, I was partly involved. We used to love this guy called Hype Williams. So yeah, I felt like I had a say in the name, but I think it's taken on a life of its own. And I think back then, when there was still Yahoo, and Yahoo was like the only thing, there was no Gmail or any of these other, you know, accounts, I opened a Hypress at yahoo.com. So yeah, it does bring back good memories, and how I pretty much found PR, because, well, actually PR found me. So guys have good memories, definitely.
I want to follow up on your mention there of a record label that you started up. Mm-hmm. I need to know if it's still going and how it was sort of starting a record label back then, because there's obviously a lot of controversy that goes around about record labels in South Africa right now. So would you say the climate was sort of similar to how it operates at the moment? And where is that record label today?
So we were just young kids. My boyfriend's name was DJ Bionic, which became Hype. It was Hype and it became Bionic. So he's pretty much still known in the game, DJ Bionic. But I'm talking like 100 years ago. So we were just some young kids in high school. We used to have a few friends that were hip-hop artists, graffiti artists, designers, graphic designers. And we were all just like young kids that were so hungry. And there was really no opportunity out there. So we created opportunity for ourselves. So he was a DJ who would play the music. I was very good at speaking and writing. So like I said, PR found me. I didn't even know what publicity or PR was. Back then, I was just a 16, 17-year-old kid. Who loved hip hop. So I found my positivity in hip hop, and I grew up in the culture, in the scene. So hip hop was always like a positive offering for all of us. So we were just these young kids. We were 16, 17. We're like, let's create this record label and put out the music. So we were just, you know, trying to figure it out. It's very different right now because there's so much opportunity out there. The face of hip hop has changed so much over the past, I would say, 25 years. The record label was called Eargasm Records, which then we extended to Eargasm Entertainment. And it's not around anymore. Life happened. We broke up. He carried on the label for a bit. But we were just young kids who didn't, you know, we didn't really know what we were doing. We were just in it for the love.
Melanie, this is quite a privilege, because I was, you know, the first time that Nasipi had hinted that this is who our guest is going to be, I was like, what? I am there. I am going to make sure I am there. You know, so really, it's quite a privilege and honor to be speaking to you, especially of someone that has been working within the industry. And as Nasipu has correctly, you know, stated that I've got quite a lot of questions because I have followed you in all of your footsteps. What I want to know from you is, how have you been able to maintain all the relationships that you have? Because you're quite a person that's well known, and it's never easy, you know, dealing with people from all walks of life. So how have you been able to maintain the relationships that you have and made sure that you've made something good out of it? Because I know that within the PR world, as you've just mentioned now, alongside with you working within the PR industry, I mean, within the hip hop industry, it has changed so much, and the same can be said for PR. So how have you managed to maintain all your relationships?
I maintain my authenticity with people. If I don't like you, I'm not going to fake it. And I think I was born in an era where we didn't have to fake it to make it. We were just kids trying to figure it out. So a lot of the major relationships I have now stemmed from young people who were around at the same time as me, who are now in positions of power, for instance, editors and commissioning editors and big deals in the industry, that grew up alongside me or with me. So those relationships I've maintained. I think the newer ones are a little bit more tricky and harder to maintain, because I'm not a youngster like you guys. I've been around for a long time. So it's about starting up those new relationships. So I think it is time consuming, but I love networking. So it never feels like work. I try and always check on people during COVID. And yeah, I spend a lot of my time maintaining relationships by calling, checking on people, messaging, WhatsApping, SMSing. Yeah, it's a process, but I've managed to do it successfully. And I think that's what keeps me, you know, successful in what I do, or trying to be successful in everything I do.
That's awesome. So, you know, you just touched on quite a valid point, and I'm going to put it into the PR industry, where you just briefly spoke about that the hip hop industry has changed quite a lot. So we've experienced COVID, we're slowly getting out of it, even though it's still there, we're slowly getting out of it. But within the industry itself, it has changed so much. So within your view, how do you feel that PR has changed in South Africa? Because, I mean, you've been working within that industry for quite a long time now. So in your view, what has changed, and what is it that you think that people should really take note of and take good care of in order to, you know, further their brands and things of that nature?
Sure. I think social media has obviously like completely revolutionized the industry, not only for PR, but also journalism, writing, you know, magazines, like print. When I say magazines, I'm talking about print. So a few years ago, there was this platform called MySpace, and I was completely intrigued by it. And it was really for artists and for creatives. And I mean, I'm a publicist. We're sort of creative, but it's not for us. And I mastered that. I didn't have a family, a boyfriend, a husband at the time. So I had all the time in the world. I was hungry for knowledge, hungry for figuring out what's next. And I'm from the old school where we sent out faxes as a press release, one at a time with a cover page. So I figured out that social media platform. So I've always tried to maintain to be one step ahead of the game. But back to your question, social media has revolutionized the game. So young people don't per se need a publicist in the beginning. And it's what I tell a lot of young people who called me and say, Mal, I need a publicist. No, publicity is free. It's out there. It's at the, you know, at the press of your thumb or your finger. Social media makes everybody a publicist, a journalist. You can get your brand out there, the news out there immediately, relatively quickly from, you know, the old school PR where to send out a press release. But having said that, I don't take away from the fact that some brands do need PR, because you don't either have the time to manage your own social media, or you just need somebody to manage your brand because you're too big of a brand right now. So this is what I always tell young people, do your own PR. PR has changed so drastically over the past few years, and having moved so far away from MySpace, where Facebook came into play, then Twitter, then Instagram, and yes, you can do your own PR. I hope it answered your question.
No, you did. You did. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
For anyone who's listening to the chat, I didn't introduce ourselves as the host. I'm Nasipi Zwane, and I've got my co-host with me, Uzama Khumalo, who is the cultural curator and also the founder of Itegu Connect, doing major things right now in Durban. And I am really just appreciative of the fact that both of you actually, you know, took time aside to have this chat. And I'm really stoked. Now on Eargasm, Melanie, what you were mentioning earlier, would you say that Eargasm sort of, you know, laid down a proper or a solid foundation for you to go on and become, you know, the dope publicist, you know, that you are? And what would you say you took from your time during, you know, Eargasm Records that you now apply into your profession at the moment?
Yeah, most Eargasm. It taught me so much. I mean, just to take it back, at the time I was studying fashion design. And I did that just because I didn't know how to explain to my parents that I love writing and I love music, but I can't rap. I love the culture and this is what hip hop is. So my parents didn't get it. I myself didn't know what PR was at the time. So I was this young kid studying fashion design, but on the weekend running a nightclub with my boyfriend and trying to figure out how we're going to put this music out. So Eargasm was fundamental in my success. I think it helped me build a foundation of what I did because I found myself in this space where I was trying to put out some music of my friends and colleagues. And, you know, we were just trying to figure it out. But it really laid the foundation for where I am right now. I think what I do carry from what I learned at Eargasm now is, I don't know, my basic skills, pursue your passion and your drive and your love early on, and you'll never work a day in your life.
Sure, that is a very beautiful explanation. I like how you explained it there. And obviously later on then, you then became, you know, the director of Two Tone Communications. Now I need to know where that sort of started from. How did that actually come about that you end up becoming the director of Two Tone?
So sad fact, but the boyfriend and I at the time then broke up. I mean, he's a DJ. It was to be expected. But we grew in different directions. I went into corporate life and I started working for a corporate company. I did some work in the community, something that was my second passion, which always comes back and knocks at my door. But I worked for an agency and we did all the Love Life programs in the country. For those of you who don't know, Love Life was an organization that taught positive lifestyle and positive living to young people to ensure that ultimately they don't get HIV. And this was many, many, many moons ago. And I found myself in that space and I loved what I was doing there. But entertainment was always in the back of my mind. So it called me back and I was headhunted by an agency. And I started working on brands like the Summer Awards, the South African Music Awards, and quite a few African Music Awards. And I love that. But all the time I was doing that, I was being encouraged by my friends and family that, Mel, you should really just start your own thing. And I think 2010 gave all of us the opportunity, or anybody who was young at the time, an opportunity to say, let me try do this on my own. You know, there's so much opportunity in this country. And I quit my cushy agency job and I registered the small business called Two Tone. Actually, I wanted Hypress Communication, but there was a company that was similar. So Two Tone was the second option. And I registered my business and I've never looked back. And it's, what, 11 years this year? And yeah, and the rest is history. I'm sure we can insert that. Yes,
definitely gonna insert that there. It's really incredible that, you know, you've been able to push, you know, this long. And you know, Zama, I think you could jump in on this one with a follow-up as well. That's really dope what you've definitely done there, Melanie. Well done.
I agree with Nasipi that it's really incredible. And you know, touching on that with Two Tone from its small development stage, I just want to know from you as to, you know, you started out small and sometimes people don't take you seriously when you're still starting out, because I mean, now you're starting out on your own and you aren't starting out without any representation. Mm-hmm. How were you able to gain the trust of people? I know that probably you had touched on a lot of clients and everything, but how were you able to still start out and just motivate yourself? Because sometimes when you're a small brand, maybe you don't have the backing of big brands per se. They don't take you seriously.
Yeah, I make it sound very simple, but you're so right. It's brands and people and individuals. They don't trust you. They don't know you. I was fortunate and blessed within my corporate space to have worked with a brand called YFM. It was a youth station that was coming up and they were doing great things. And I worked with them in my agency job. And I think I impressed them so much. And they love my work ethic and they love what I represented. And I think they were all about young people and supporting like African youngsters. So when I quit my cushy job, they knocked on my door and they were like, hey, do you want to come work on a project with us? Not as an employee, but you know, as an agency. And I'm like, but I'm just one little person. And they were like, well, we've got this huge event coming up. And if you can handle our PR and our guest list, you know, let's give it a go. So they really believed in me. And I think that was my first big blessing, because I didn't have any clients. And another client who believed in me was a young lady that I actually believed in when I was in agency, and I kept pushing. And her name is Bonang Matiba. And she was, I'd always pushed her during, you know, when she was younger, in, when I was in agency. So she came back to me and she said, Mel, I have a magazine cover and I'm doing amazing things. And can you represent me and do this launch for me? So those two people propelled my career. And that just took me to the next level, where if a person like Bonang and YFM can believe in this young company, you know, we all for it. And that really propelled my business into what it is today.
I don't know about you, Nasipi, but for me, that is so motivational that someone who has been in the industry for quite some time can still say that it was hard in the beginning. You know, when you don't have, you know, the trust of people per se, you still keep on going. And to know that someone like Queen Bee just comes to you, a home again, you know,
for sure.
No, it really is motivational. And I'm really, really blessed that we're having this conversation right now. So here's a bit of a plot twist that I'm going to ask to you, Melanie, that within your whole career, give us two of your favorite projects that you've ever worked on, and why you feel those are your favorite projects. It can be anything. It can be an individual or it can be a brand. Two of your favorite projects.
The first one that I must note must be a concert that you guys might have been too young for at the time. It was called Black August, and this happened in 2001. This is pre-Two-Tone Communications, when I was still running Eargasm Entertainment. We put together this concert. We were young kids, the boyfriend and I. We also had a third partner, but we were like young kids. Like, we want to do this massive hip-hop show, and we're going to show everybody that we know what we're doing. So we went to Sprite, and Sprite gave us R1 million, and we were bringing out Lauryn Hill, The Roots, Talib Kweli, Black Thought. Well, he's from The Roots. Those were the big names. Black August was an ongoing political movement that was running in the US that wanted to really, they had grassroots in the US, and they were trying to start up in Africa. And all the money raised went back into Black communities and education. And it was just a great concept. So we jumped on it and we were like, yay, let's do this thing. So we did Black August in South Africa. But lo and behold, as it may be, Lauryn Hill was going through some personal issues. So she literally disappeared. I think it was a week before the show. So we had to go back to Sprite and say, hey, we have everybody else, but Lauryn Hill's gone AWOL. Obviously, they pulled out. So we had no money. So we had to go to parents and friends and anyone we possibly could find to help us raise this money to pay for the flights that hadn't been paid for, the accommodation, the concert venues, the sound, the staging. But thank God, many blessings later, the concert happened. And that's what literally put us on the map as three young people trying to do amazing things in South Africa. The concert was a huge success, not only in Durban, but also in Cape Town and Johannesburg. And we made a name for ourselves. So I always have to mention Black August because it's what put me on the map in this game, or it's what put my name in the history books, I hope, one day. Maybe let's do one modern. One of my favorite, let's see, locally, I would say Black Coffee has had a project that came out called Music is King, where he had been building his brand for many, many years. And he had this crazy, insane vision of filling up the Dome, which is a massive venue in Johannesburg, with just himself and a few friends. It was a crazy idea. And it happened 3-4 years ago. And we got together as a team. His company approached some of us to come on as suppliers. I was going to do the PR. I thought it was an insane idea, but we did it. It was a really life-changing, history-making project. We filled up the Dome and it was insane. And then obviously COVID happened, so we couldn't do it again. But it was one of the best projects I've worked on, just because it was so different and was thinking outside the box and taking a risk and doing something completely local and filling up the Dome. It wasn't really heard of, and we made it happen.
We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So
Do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. We all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like.
Bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
Now with this is just really, really interesting. Now with Black August, how were you able to get the international guests? Was it through Sprite or you had your own connections? Because I know sometimes with international guests, it takes quite a while for them to even notice overseas people. And especially if maybe you're starting out or you're not that well known, it's not really that easy. How were you able to get the international guests?
So it was slightly different in those days because I think people were just hungry to come to Africa, the motherland. So it wasn't really us who dealt with the artists, but it was more the platform. So Black August was already a movement that was happening in the US. They would already have concerts and festivals. So the organizers were trying to pretty much sell this template to South Africa. So for that year in New York, they would have the show with Lauryn Hill, Black Thought, Talib Kweli, The Roots. They already had their lineup. So once that happened in the US, then they would sell that template to different promoters in Africa. And at the time, Nigeria, Kenya, Congo, none of those countries were really doing much. So SA was pretty much the leader on the continent doing festivals and concerts and, you know, international stuff. So we picked it up and we were young kids, but I think because we had a bit of a profile having brought smaller artists, because Eargasm had started bringing smaller artists. So we had already brought Dead Prez the year before. We had already brought Barbito Garcia. We have brought Wat, you guys might know as Tidi Ibrahim now, but she was named Wat at the time. So we had brought smaller artists previously. So we kind of had a repertoire, you know, in the scene. So when we reached out to them, they were like, yay, let's go. But they trusted us because they were eager to come out to the motherland. And we had the Million Rand Sprite backing.
Wow. The theme that I'm getting here is that, you know, you must just taste that risk and go forth and conquer because, wow, I didn't even know that Dead Prez actually came to South Africa. That's really incredible. So, yo, Melanie, I'm gaining a lot of gems from you right now. I told you that I've been following you. So you unpacking all of these stories is literally like motivation, not only for me or Nasipi, but other people that will be that are listening to this, you know, conversation that, no, I'm actually on the right path. And especially as a creative, and I've always emphasized this, that creators, especially in South Africa, are doing the most. It's just that sometimes they need a platform or they just need a leader per se that will show them that no, it can be done, but this is how you do it. So, you know, it's conversations like these that are so empowering and that are so great to have, that and also dispelling a lot of truths that a lot of myths that we had as well. So for me, I'm really inspired by this.
It was 20 years ago, and I'm assuming you might be in that bracket. So it was 20 years ago. It was a long time ago.
Jeez, yeah. I am not going to reveal my age, but I understand what you're saying.
I wasn't going
to ask. To answer your question, Melanie, I think in 2001, I was 5 years old.
So oh my God. I was... Now you got me feeling real old.
Nah, you actually look really young, actually. You look like 28 or something, so you got good genes. You know, when you say, I mean, all the things that you're talking about, Melanie, I'm echoing what, you know, Uzama was saying, and that this is so inspiring and motivating, the fact that you guys, you know, you were kids, firstly, and, you know, you guys had these big ambitions and you were able to pull something of this magnitude off. And I'm just even looking at, you know, with the Black Coffee sort of show, you know, what does it actually take to pull off an event of that magnitude besides money? Obviously, money is going to be involved. You did mention the million that was given to you guys by Sprite. But money aside, what else actually goes into planning an event as big as, say, maybe Black August or even filling up the dome?
You know, I really think it's largely based on relationships as well. Another very cool and successful event I worked on was called Cotton Fest, which is owned and masterminded by Ricky Rick. a very famous hip hop artist. He started off this campaign where we didn't have the money. Nobody, yeah, everybody loves Ricky, but brands are not going to commit to 2 million rand or 1 million rand when they don't know what your event is, what it's about. So you have to use your relationships to get around. So it's a matter of saying, hey, Mel, I've got this concept. Would you come on board? I can't pay you your usual rate, but for sure in year two, I got you. And I think that's maybe a template that we can use as a case study, because Ricky then went to a lot of his friends and said, listen, I've got this great idea. It's for the culture. You know, can you jump on board with me? And hell yeah, like we had 100 artists who jumped on board. Nobody was paid. Everybody did it for either free or a minimal cost. And it was a major success, not just for him and the team that worked on it, but the entire culture for young people. I think what it did for me personally was hip hop. I was raised in the hip hop culture. And this thing for me, the impact it had on young people to put them in a safe space in hip hop, it made it all worthwhile for me. So back to the question, relationships, very, very important. I think your reputation is also very important when it comes to finding sponsors and for people to believe in you. Also for venues to take a risk and give you their venue. When you're going to the Dome, it's not always about money. It's also about what is this person's reputation? What have they done before? So I would say partly your reputation and the reputation you have in the industry. If that fails, obviously money can buy anything. But those two things are quite important. Because I'm not on the eventing side, I'm sure there's a lot more other things that are very important. But those are two key things for me.
You mentioned the dynamics being different 20 years ago. I understand, you know, with the concept that you've just basically explained now, working, you know, in the current time that we're living in 2021, and that, you know, the reputation is there. You've been going for a very long time. The finances are there, you know, relationships are there. What about 20 years back? I mean, you did mention, obviously, Sprite, the 1 million, and obviously over in the States, them wanting to bring, you know, Black August to the motherland. But looking at the reputation side of things, you know, how are you able to pull that off, you know, just with Eargasm not really being as prolific as, say, Two Tone?
So I think prior to Eargasm coming up and, you know, both starting to be founded and established, there was individuals that had put this together. So before Eargasm, there was a DJ who ran a nightclub. There was a lady who ran the door. So we had slightly built our reputation and we started putting small events together. So we had started building our reputation. So it comes back to relationships and your basically your you know, how people trust you and the reputation that you've built for yourself. So when I think Eargasm came about, we were already two young kids that were in the industry for a few years. So it wasn't just something that we had come up with. So a lot of people believed in us. And I think our peers, they were very fundamental in getting the business off the ground, because here we didn't have to convince an artist to sign up with us. There was an artist that the labels weren't looking at, that they weren't interested. They've been shopping at all the major labels in the country, but they weren't willing to take the risk. And when I say that, I'm talking Mischief, Specs. There were young, talented hip hop artists that, you know, the major labels weren't looking at. Hip hop wasn't a thing 25 years ago. And here was a label called Eargasm that was willing to give you a shot. We were at the beginning of it all. So everybody believed in everybody. And I think there wasn't that much opportunity. So we all supported each other and we all jumped on it. There was no beef in those days. Everybody was trying to support the next guy to get ahead.
That is very beautiful. And you mentioned some really big names there. I remember as a kid always seeing, you know, Mischief, who I think has passed away as well. You know, these are very big things that you guys were doing all the way back then, Melanie. This is why we've constantly been starstruck, you know, just chatting to you right now.
Listen, we were sitting in the office when Lakshan Culture was starting out then. And we had the graphic designer was in our office and he was like, guys, I need to come up with this logo for Lakshan Culture. And we were like, let's all sit and come up with this thing. And we sat in the backyard at our office, which was my mom's house, picking mulberries off the tree, coming up with this logo. Lakshan Culture is a legendary, you know, urban youth brand that was around for many, many years, still around. But we were there at the beginning. So Yeah, here we are years later.
Before I pass on to Uzama, I just want to know, with all the things that you've achieved, you know, how have you sort of managed to sort of not get lost in all the hype, and not get lost in all the lights and all the, you know, the artists that you get to work with, because they're very big artists, right? So how do you manage to sort of just, you know, keep a level head?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I think all the people that are massive stars right now, I'm not gaga over. I was young. Growing up, I probably would act gaga and I didn't have access to those people. So the truth of the matter is I've been in this so long that nothing phases me. I think if I did see a legendary person like Sade, I would probably have a heart attack and die. But yeah, I just think I've been doing it so long that nothing phases me. I think also I've got the pictures with all the people I love and I've had the groupie moments or the moments. But also on the other side, I think that the thing that keeps me grounded in a way is my family, my kids, just real life. Because the reality is you have to come home and be a normal person at the end of the day. Your child doesn't know that you might be the successful, you know, businesswoman or you're a powerful PR person out in the streets or in corporate. So you come home to your child who just sees you as everybody else. So I think family keeps me grounded. I think being in Johannesburg, and I'm also from Durban, so hi homies, but I think keeping caught up in the streets of Josie is so easy. But I really think I was grounded in the beginning, and that's what kept me grounded throughout. And if not, my mom is calling me and she's going to give me a hot clap.
Jeez, Nilini, you actually brought up such a valid conversation starter, actually, with regards to you actually being from Durban. Did you feel that you going to Johannesburg helped you immensely? Or was it a case of, you know what, let me just go and see what is out there in Johannesburg and everything like that? Because, I mean, there's always that notion of Johannesburg is the best thing to happen for people, especially that are not from Johannesburg. So there's always been that thing that if you're from Durban and you're in Johannesburg, life is going to actually automatically happen for you and everything like that. How was it in your case?
You know, I came here very young, so I think I'd have to give that question to my parents, but they came out here to find the gold in Igoli. So we moved back when I was almost a teenager, but I think Joburg called us back because there was this illusion of the lights and the better life, and it's completely a lie. It's not true. And maybe this is the capital of corruption, but my family did move back to Joburg when in my early teens. So I don't know the difference, but what I do know is I love going back to Durban. I love having Durban clients because it's just so relaxed. It's so much easier to deal with. There's just a lot less stress and pressure than Joburg. And I think Joburg can be very plastic, where I find Durban to be a lot less plastic and more real. And I think people are just more calm. The air out there is just better and healthier and less polluted. So we think clearer. So I always love going back home. So to be fair, I the streets of Joburg didn't call me or the city lights. It called my parents. I can't say I'm really thankful because I believe I could have made a similar career in Durban. It was always my calling to be where I am right now.
You touched on another valid point where I had earlier asked that, in your view, what has changed within the PR world? So also alongside that question, what do you feel is needed within the industry that you're in? So for instance, people maybe speaking on the history of creatives, which is something that I do and also Nasipi does in a way as well, and making more documentaries, for instance, within the creative industry, because we don't have exactly like documentaries talking about maybe, electro music, like house music, how it started in South Africa, for instance, just as an example. Do you feel that we should have more of those type of things within the industry?
You know what, I think in life in general, in any industry, it's good to know where you come from. So I think with what your craft is and what you study and what you strive to be or your passion, it's always nice to know where it started, like your culture or your heritage. It's always great. So for me, I mean, yes, we were at the beginning when hip hop was starting, but we also, you know, we took from different genres and different cultures of how it started. And we took things that worked in that culture or that genre that might work in ours. So I think within any industry, it's good to know where you come from. So the answer would be yes, it would be great to have more information. Because like you're saying, you didn't even know Dead Prez came to this country. And that's just short because there isn't enough information out there. I don't think we celebrate our roots or our beginnings as much as we should. And I think that just really does guide you and make you more successful in the craft. It's a basic fundamental. If you know how things had been done in the beginning, you won't have to suffer relearning them. The information is all there. You just need to grasp it. And in this sense, definitely more documentaries and information sharing.
How did you sort of come up with your business know-how? You did mention that, you know, back in 2010, you know, you registered the small business and all that there. But I'd like to believe that, you know, business is a completely sort of different, you know, sort of department to what you do as sort of like a publicist. You know, you get to learn so how did you sort of transition and be like, okay, I've got the skill of being a publicist, now I need to make this a full functioning business?
So I'm really just good at PR, writing, people skills, networking, but I don't know nothing about starting a business. I don't know where to begin. So just a practical an example or an incident that happened to me that just literally burnt me and I had to figure it out. But I thought business was simple. Let's go ahead. Let's start this business. Like I said earlier, I registered the company, got the name, and I was like, let's go. But I don't know anything about, you know, finance and running a business. So did this project for this radio station, and they offered me the amount of money that I got paid a whole month's salary at my corporate job. And this was literally half a week's work. So did the job, invoiced the client, and then end of the month came and SARS took 25% of my money. I nearly died. I was like, how can these people take my money? My business had not come into effect because it takes 30, 60 days or something. I hadn't opened a bank account. So I literally invoiced them with my own bank details. So I just didn't know enough information. And that threw me into such hot water where I'd already spent that money. And SARS took that 25%. So I had to figure it out real quick. So hired myself a finance person, a bookkeeper at the time, got more information, started learning stuff that I completely didn't know about. So it was not I was kind of baptized by fire. And that was a learning I had to learn because I might be really good at PR, but business, I didn't really have that acumen right up front in the beginning.
It's such a beautiful story, you know. I mean, as difficult as it was, you know, in the initial stages, you know, you had to go through that baptism by fire in order to be where you are today. It definitely had to happen. Something you mentioned earlier there, Melanie, when you were talking about working with, you know, Black Coffee and, you know, the events at the Dome and everything like that there. And you're mentioning, you know, events and Ricky Rick, Cotton Fest and all that. One interesting point you then came to was, and then COVID hit. How much of an impact or effects did COVID have on you running as a business or Two-Tone Communications?
Events, you know, events literally went on, well, literally stopped happening. So that meant a majority of my business just stopped happening. So I had to figure out what next, because my primary clients are festivals, events, launches, CD launches, artists, music festivals, all of that. So that literally came to a halt. So I had to figure out what next. So I started doing some corporate PR. And then slowly artists started releasing music, which meant you had to think outside of the box because there was no more festivals where they could perform. There was no more launches, that physical people launches where we could, you know, have a launch with 1,000 people attending or 200 people. So I had to think outside the box. I started doing the corporates. I started launching different sort of PR. My business even went into selling some sanitizers and masks, which was outside of PR. I think a lot of us had to think outside the box while we were waiting for the world to open up again. I think corporate PR is not something I enjoy, but I had to do it to survive. And it became more fun because, like I said, when you love something so much, you never work a day in your life. So in the beginning, it felt like a bit of work coming out of not doing anything and baking banana bread all day for a month or so. But bills were piling up and you need to figure out what next. And I love that I have such an entrepreneurial spirit or a hustling spirit that I figured it out.
Yeah, you know, COVID really came with, you know, the situation where people really had to adapt, and props to you for being able to, you know, transition and move with the times. I mean, I'm even looking back with us as a podcast, and that we had to initially we were doing, you know, interviews, like going out and seeing people and talking to them. And then we had to transition to more of an online thing, which I'm grateful for, because then if COVID never hits, it's sort of like, you know, our chat with Melanie wouldn't be a thing. Yeah, so I thought I'd also give you props for being able to then transition and sort of not let, you know, COVID, you know, sort of break you down in any way possible. Zama, do you echo the same sentiments on your end?
Definitely, definitely. I feel that COVID also gave a chance to those that didn't have a voice to actually have a voice. You know, and what I mean by that is that you got a lot of platforms, myself included, whereby we were just like, no, you know what? Let's just go through it and just, you know, see where we can go from it. And Itaewo Connect, for instance, has been in its first year of existence. We only recently celebrated our first year, and this was something that's just based just online, you know, where we're interviewing people I never even thought that I would be able to interview, but it's really good that it gave people the courage to actually go after their dreams, you know.
For sure.
So alongside that, one thing I've actually noticed about you, Melanie, is that you also like branching out onto other things, and by that I mean the Feather Awards is in its 13 years of existence. So with the Feather Awards, why did you feel that it was something that was needed? I mean, the LGBTI community is always having events that are obviously showcasing their culture, the whole community and things of that nature. So why did you feel that you needed to be a part of the Feather Awards?
Geez, it's not a new thing. I'm part of the community. So I'm an ally. So I'm the A. I'm sometimes the plus. But I'm a member of the community. I was at the very beginning. So Feathers is 13 years old. And the guy who founded it, Tami Khotlolo, was a long-standing friend of mine who was really very keen to start something fun and flamboyant for the community 13 years ago. He had a small little launch in a nightclub that I used to do PR for. And he kept telling me about this event he wants to put together called the Feather Awards. So we set it up. I wasn't able to attend on the day. I think I was in Brazil with my corporate job. And so I've been to every single Feather since. And then last year, I had the honor and the privilege of doing the PR for it again this year, because the lady who does the PR, who's one of my mentors, had moved abroad to Amsterdam. So I was unable to do it. Prior to that, I had done the social media for them, I think year 2, 3, 4 onwards. So it's something that's always been close to my heart. I love the community. I am thankful for the community that they've been a large part of my success of my career, for people like Tami Khotlolo and other, you know, gay guys who were always supportive of my events. Back in corporate days, they would be the first people to reply to my events and my parties. So they helped build my career, and they were the vibe. They would come to the party and make it a party. So people like Tami, you know, helped build, I feel, my career in a big way. So I'll always feel I need to give back to them. To the community at large. And just because we're not part of the bigger group, we're always isolated or victimized. So I've never felt like I fitted in the bigger community. I always was odd. Even in my family, I've always felt like the odd one out. And I love what the community stands for of inclusion. And that always brings me back to any form of event, charity, movement, like project, organization that talks about inclusion for all. I always want to get involved in that sort of movement.
You know, Melanie, you guys, this is one of the last questions, because you also don't want to keep you too long. But, you know, you wear many different hats, you know, you play many different roles. There's many different things that you're doing. And in the beginning, when we were doing the introduction, I did mention, you know, the Special Olympics South Africa, and that you're an ambassador of that and the deputy chairperson. So how did that sort of come about? And what was it about it that sort of, you know, sort of attracted you to or towards, you know, being an ambassador?
Sure. Thank you for this question. I'm glad you didn't start with this question, because this is all we would have spoke about. So thank you for keeping it for last. Like I said in the previous question, I'm all about inclusion for all. And I think because I always felt like the black sheep in the family, and I didn't feel like I fitted in high school. When I grew up and I had a voice and I realized I had a voice, I wanted to use that voice for inclusion and making people all feel equal and the same, because we all bleed red. And I'm all about this in this inclusion movement. So when I was approached by Special Olympics, the CEO actually approached me. She pretty much stalked me on Facebook. And I always call her the annoying white lady because she kept messaging me to come and meet with them. And I really didn't know what Special Olympics was. I wasn't sure, to be honest. So I gave them the light of day, and I was like, okay, you know, this lady's been irritating me for so long. So let me just go and give her, you know, meet with her and find out what it's about. And I went to their offices, and she explained to me that Special Olympics is different from the Paralympics and the Olympics, and it's for people with special needs. So mostly kids with Down syndrome, ADHD. At the time, I had a three-year-old son, and I could imagine, I couldn't imagine raising a kid is so hard enough. Raising a kid with special needs must be the most daunting and hard thing, but at the same, obviously as rewarding as having, you know, the child that I had. So I was like, I really am intrigued about what you guys stand for, and I want to get involved. So I started doing some work with them and meeting some of the kids and the athletes and the people in the movement. And it really spoke to my heart. And it's an organization that might not necessarily speak to everybody, because it is very emotional to be involved with people with special needs, but like us, they're just human, you know, they bleed red. We all the same. So it really was an organization that spoke to my heart. And you guys asked earlier on what keeps me grounded. And it's this sort of work that reminds you that we're all the same. So I've been working with them now for, I think it's five, six years. I rope in all the celebrities that I work with to come and get involved. Some feel the movement, and they get involved. And I love the work I do with them. I love the work they do. I've been blessed enough to go with them to the Olympics and support the South African athletes, the national team. We came back with so many medals, which in relation to the Paralympics and the other Olympics that everybody knows about, we come home with the most medals in ratio to athletes that we send. And because it is a taboo subject, nobody really wants to speak about people with Down syndrome or, you know, special intellectual needs, that we're not really given a voice. So I'm hoping that my voice is louder, and all the celebrities that I pull. And we have this event every year called the Polar Plunge, where we get all the celebs we possibly can together, and they jump into a freezing cold pool of water. It's really a stupid exercise, but the noise that it makes from this event, and everybody talks about it, gives me the joy, and everything I put behind it comes from the voice and the news and the coverage that comes from this event. So we just recently had it a few weeks ago, and we had over 100 celebrities who plunged. Corporates donate money. For me, it's really the PR that comes out of it, because people talk about us and they realize who we are and what we stand for. And we're all about inclusion, just like the LGBTI community. We're all about inclusion for all. And we happen to raise quite a bit of money for the athletes to send them to Russia for the next World Games. So thank you for asking the question. It's my big passion. And I hope you guys now know what Special Olympics is. And hopefully next year, when your podcast is blowing the hell up, you guys, I can call you and say, come plunge for us. And you wouldn't say, who are you? Hypers who? So if you guys give me a commitment, please, right now on air, that would be amazing.
100%. You didn't even have to 100%.
We do. We commit. We definitely will.
Yeah, like who? Hypers who? We don't know you. We don't know. I would love to get you involved.
Oh, we would love to be a part of that. So we definitely commit. So we're definitely going to be a part of that. And thank you for even reaching out an invitation like that, Melanie. We really appreciate it. And it's something that really warms my heart, you know, the fact that you're using, you know, the connections that you've made through all the celebrities that you know, to enhance and benefit and help out, you know, when it comes to something like, you know, Special Olympics South Africa. And it's really, it's beautiful. It's really warming up my heart, and it all just works hand in hand. I can't thank you enough for this opportunity, Melanie. Zama, any remaining questions on your side?
Yeah, I just got like three more questions, and then we are so good and everything. You know, just using up this opportunity as much as we can, and really appreciative of it. Melanie, within the line of work that you do as well, I know that you mentioned that you got mentored. Do you do any mentoring of any sort?
I do. I've mentored quite a few young ladies that have come up in the industry. And I think as much as time permits, I am completely open to mentor people. I try and mentor one girl at a time till she feels that, you know, she's got enough knowledge from me or she's cool to, you know, go on her merry way. And then I take on the next one. I think with COVID happening, it was great because it could be virtual. Right now, I'm not mentoring anybody because I haven't really had the time to do such. But yeah, I'm always open because, you know, somebody mentored me. So I have to pass it forward as much as I possibly can. So I'm always open to mentor young ladies and young boys because it's inclusion for all.
Yeah, definitely. And then also, what lessons have you learned? Like, what's the one major lesson that you've learned within your career that you will always take with you no matter what?
I think follow your heart, follow your passion, dream big. There's so many. I think my biggest one is, you know, follow your heart and your passion. And no matter what anybody tells you, because I, like I said earlier, I don't know what PR was, but I knew I loved to write. I loved to network, and it so happened to be in the PR space. And that's why I feel like I don't really work that hard, because it's something I love doing. Every day I wake up wanting to sit at my desk and promote the latest musician or festival or artist. So it all feels like a really super cool job.
Where do you see the future of the entertainment industry in South Africa? And then secondly, if someone is listening, wanting to be the next Melanie Ramji, what is it that they need to do in order for them to be on the level that you are at right now? And that's literally just for me.
Where do I see the industry going? I think because of COVID and what has happened, I think the industry will obviously dramatically change. I think we've moved a lot more globally towards the movement of smaller parties. And I think that's going to be with us for a little bit longer than we think. So we're not going to have the 20,000 festivals in this country for a while. I think the US have progressed to that, but we still don't have enough people vaccinated or educated enough to get the vaccine. I think there is sort of a political agenda as well. So if we're talking about the relatively near future, definitely a lot different from what we know it to be. But I see so much growth in the next 10, 15 years. I think just having been around 20 years ago in the industry, it's grown so much. I think there's so much growth still going to happen in this country, and I'm excited to see it. There's no limit to our talent in South Africa, and I would hope we can be in a position like our West African counterparts in the next few years, few months, where we are selling out O2 Arena in the UK, and we are reaching platinum in the US, and that's what I hope and what I foresee in South Africa's future, industry-wise. Next question. Definitely nobody can be the next Melanie Ramji, but they can be something bigger and better based on my template. What do I say to them? I think know your talent. So for instance, if you're not a great networker and you're not into writing, those are fundamentals you might need in the industry. I think be realistic of what you can and can't do. If PR is something you want to pursue, be clear it's something that, you know, you're good at or you can work at and become good at. But keep striving to be the best. I think be in it for the right reasons, because I came into PR not because I wanted to hang out with famous people. You know, I didn't believe it's the coolest industry, you know, just to, you know, be famous, like living on the gram. I was in it for the right reasons from the very beginning. I want to promote talent. I want to promote festivals. I want to sell your brand. So doing it for the right reason, I believe, is one of the reasons I'm still around and why I'm still here. And I love my truth every day. So I hope that answered your question.
Definitely. Just key points. Me raising my hand, singing hallelujah. Those are definitely key points. And thank you so much for them.
Please drop your social media handles. Thanks for putting me on.
100%. Thank you for joining us and taking time out of, you know, your day and having this chat with us. What are your social media handles, quick, for anyone who wants to engage with you?
No, I was looking for you guys, but since you asked about mine, I'm Hypress everywhere. Everywhere, pretty much. TikTok even. Hypress. Ooh. HYPRESS. I bring the hype.
My handle's literally, it's Itegu Connect. So that's ITHEKU Connect. CONNECT. That's literally on all social media handles. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Love it.
Dope. And on my end, it's at Sludge Underground on Instagram, Facebook, on Twitter. We are at Sludge031. But Melanie, we're going to give you a follow everywhere. So you're going to see us in them notifications.
Definitely.
Thank you. Bye.